What's going on, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you learn something new in this podcast and find yourself inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back and keep you stuck from getting your work to work. What motivates you to take care of yourself today, not to mention your future self? Michael E. Stern is a photographer, image maker, and storyteller honoring the men and women who build. He is on the show today to answer that question by sharing how he has approached his finances and investments throughout his self-employed career. Whether you're in your first job, in the middle of your career, or nearing retirement, Michael has a lot to say about what you can do today and tomorrow to educate yourself and prepare for the day when you don't want to or can't work anymore. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/463. Michael, welcome to Getting Work to Work. I love that you dropped a topic to me that you wanted to talk about. But before we dive into the topic, who are you and what do you do?
Oh, Chris, does anybody know who they really are? I mean, think about it. We're protoplasm and salt and chemicals and water. But I formed into a professional image maker. You know, I used to promote myself as a time-lapse guy, but really I'm a photographer, image maker, storyteller. Mm-hmm. And I've been working a lot in the construction industry the last decade. I just had a shoot the other night, actually.
Oh, cool.
A night shoot. Ooh. And I hired my son for the first time.
Oh, wow. That's a whole nother topic right there.
What I'm stuck with all the time is when I go out there and do these shoots, I also want to shoot time lapse and video and stills, which is what I'm hired for. But I want to shoot this. I'm shooting these little mini films, these little mini content films mm-hmm. of a specific process that they, when they build a bridge, they make this thing called falsework, which is a wooden support structure that then the rebar and the concrete and they pour it in. When it dries, they break off this falsework. Mm. So it's a very isolated incident. And I wanted to shoot time lapse and video, but it's a very public place. I wanted someone to watch the cameras while I'm running around doing stills and got the other camera set up. So he was awesome.
That's cool.
I didn't have any expectations really, but he was earnest and he was proactive. He was asking me, you know, what the plan was, and he's never assisted Ooh. Before. And I got to say, I pat myself on the back for being a good dad, I guess, but I got some of the best time-lapse work I've ever gotten.
And oh, that's
I'm
awesome.
Super excited to cut it together. I was reviewing the footage last night and the lighting and the moment and the mm-hmm. camera angle and the timing were perfect. And that's what I live for. That's who I am. When I find those moments, mm-hmm. it's so cathartic and energizing.
Yeah.
And I get paid for it.
Go well, figure. Even better. Yeah, even better. Yeah. I don't think people really realize how many great stories there are in the construction industry.
The thing is with construction, why I like it so much, it's laborious and mm-hmm. tedious and repetitive and somewhat slow. Mm-hmm. And that allows me to photograph everything that's going on for a particular activity. I don't have to worry about if I get that, I might miss that because it's going too fast. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. And because I work with the site supervisors or the superintendent or the foreman or whoever's on site and get a sense of what the process is, I can plan my attack. And I know that I'm going to get all the sequences and I'd be able to tell a chronological story of that particular process. You know, the other thing people don't realize is how meticulous. Mm-hmm. People hear loud, noisy, men with their pants halfway down, you know, whistling at girls. That's sort of the stereotype, right? But it's really, these guys are professionals. And, mm-hmm. you know, some of these carpenters and plumbers and wire and iron guys, you know, they're making six figures a year. You know, it's a high-paying, in-demand industry. And these mm-hmm. people are highly trained. And I find them gregarious and affable and proud of their work. And it just, I fit in perfectly there. Well, that's not the way I meant. I meant that they're not standoff. Well, okay, let's move on.
No, because I hear what you're saying, because you know you're someone who takes great pride in their work, and you've just got that joking, jovial spirit riff off each other. And I think that's what you're saying.
Yes. And that, thank you for clarifying what I'm trying to say, even though it's my mind, but you're incited, I guess. But
you're welcome.
It's fun to work with these people, and you know, they wear a uniform and I get to wear a uniform. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate what they do. And, you know, my whole passion really is honoring the men and women who build. Mm. That's really what I do. And I want to tell their stories in as high a quality way as I possibly can. And that's what motivates me. That's what I am. That's what I do. I just really, really dig it. No pun intended. Really? Nope. Yeah. Don't believe me, folks.
In the area that we want to believe you in is the topic at hand. So what topic are you here to talk about?
Well, I wanted to talk about finance and saving and investing.
Okay.
As a professional.
I think we just lost half the audience right there.
Don't go away, folks. It's not going to be scary. You in the back. You in the back. Come to the front. No, don't cower. Really, it's going to work out fine. But to clarify, I am not a finance professional. I am a professional artist who does finance for himself. And all I wanted to talk about is how I do it and give you an opinion and a path and a way to get from A to B.
Yes.
And I think it's important because when you're self-employed, you have a grave responsibility to provide for your future. Mm-hmm. And you know, that old saying from B.B. King, nobody loves you like your mother, and sometimes not even her. You know? Mine does. I'm lucky. So you got to do it for yourself. You have to develop your own financial support. Mm. And if you don't embrace this concept, what happens when you can't work anymore?
Yeah.
I mean, Social Security, whatever form it exists, has always been designed as a supplement. Mm-hmm. It's not the whole shebang. It's just a portion of what you're going to need. And this process takes decades. Mm-hmm. Which is scary. I'm about, 20 years older than you?
Something like that? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, around that.
I started investing in 1987.
Okay.
So what's that, 33 years?
I was 9 years old. And,
well, Sonny, and I, you know, I'm looking at retirement in a few years, and I have built up a nice cushion. And between what I'm going to get from Social Security and what I'm going to get from my investments, I'm going to be just fine. And that brings me a lot of comfort. I'm going to be 65 mm-hmm. next year. And so I wanted to just emphasize that you can do it, and a way to do it, and a way to become active in your own future.
Yeah. Because as I was thinking about this topic myself, I know that when a lot of creatives start out, and I'm just going to speak generally about mm-hmm. creatives and include mm-hmm. photographers, filmmakers, designers, all of the professional creative worlds. The first place that we often are told to start is just like, well, just don't worry about charging, just get experience. Mm-hmm. Then it's the constant struggle of just paying the bills.
Right. But you have to think about your investments and savings as a bill you have to pay. You just have to look at it as a bill. You know, it's funny. I did not know anything about finances or investment or savings until I was in my, I guess I was 25 or 26 mm-hmm. before I started to understand the concept. My dad was an accountant, for crying out loud. He kept it a mystery.
Really?
He kept it a mystery because he wanted to take care of his kids because his dad didn't take care of him and his brother and sister. Okay. Well, that's great, Dad, but you know, a little clue would have helped. And I just started, you know, I sort of think of myself like a squirrel gathering nuts for the winter. I'm just trying to find places to put extra money. And of course, I was a little bit bold in charging as much as I could possibly charge the market. Mm. Douglas Kirkland, a photographer, one of my heroes, I think he's in his 80s now. I went to a talk he gave about 30 years ago, and he said, "You are entitled to as much as you make yourself worth." And that really stuck. It was like opening up the top of my head and just pouring it in. And it just burned into my memory circuits. And, you know, I work hard. I play hard. I deliver results, not excuses. And so I charged accordingly. And if you couldn't afford me, that was really your problem, not mine. And I was fortunate to hook up with a large company like Disney. And for 20 years, they kept my dance card punched. And I slid off as much as I could possibly slide off my income and stick it into savings. And if it meant wearing clothes longer than I wanted, or keeping a car longer than I wanted, or not going out to fancy restaurants, or foregoing a vacation, or not buying little doodads at the store, that's what I did. My wife wasn't too crazy about it then, but she's crazy about it now because she sees a big fat bank account. And, you know, she's... You didn't hear that. Can you edit that out so she doesn't...
I can. Yeah. I'll just put a long beep during that section. Short beep. Short beep. I'm sorry. Short beep.
Yeah, it's only two digits, not three. Thank you. You know, for a long time, and of course, I was fortunate, I guess, but, you know, almost 70 cents of every dollar that came in went into savings. I had that much of a cash flow.
Wow.
And I did that for about 10 years. You know, if you can afford Starbucks or you can afford a Netflix subscription, you can afford to put some money away and start small. That's what I did. You know, just get used to the idea that I got to take $50 a week and stick it over here. My brother, who was I guess he's retired now, but he was a finance guy, and he helped clue me in a little bit. And, you know, after the first $100,000 you get saved up, the money can work and grow on its own. And, you know, the other thing that a lot of creatives shy away from, I don't understand it. It's too complicated. What's a stock? What's a bond? What's a put? What's a call? What's an option? Just educate yourself. Read. You know, I don't understand the complexity of puts, calls, and options. I mean, I get the theory, but I don't do it. I buy stocks of good companies, and I buy stocks that pay dividends. So quarterly, a company will pay a percentage of the stocks you own as a cash deposit into your account, and I set that up as a DRIP dividend reinvestment program. So the money that comes in from the companies based on the stock, the amount of stocks, the number of stocks I own, you know, the amount of shares, I'm sorry, like I own 400 shares, I might get $80 from those 400 shares, and that goes back into buying another share or more shares.
Wow.
And over the years, right now, the dividends, I'm getting almost $1,000 a month in dividends from all the stocks I own.
Wait, how much?
About $1,000 a month.
Wow.
So all of the stocks I own in my retirement account at this point are paying out about $12,000 a year. And that goes right back into buying more of the stocks. And of course, then the dividends get higher because there's more shares of each of those stocks. And it's in my SEP retirement, you know, my self-employed pension / IRA. SEP IRA is what it's called. I don't think about it. It's on automatic pilot. But, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine who he's 80. And he retired a few years ago. He lives up in Seattle, and we were talking. And every morning, I check my credit scores, I check my personal bank account, and I check my investments just to see how they performed the day before and just to make sure I wasn't hacked or there's not any funny activity going on. And he does the same thing. And I just keep on top of it. I'm not paranoid. I'm just efficient. I just want to know. I want to have a handle on all the numbers. When I've taken a flyer on something, I probably have about a 50-50 track record. So I do listen to my stockbroker. I do pay attention to what he says. I don't always have to agree with him. And that's the other thing that you have to remember is they work for you. This guy works for me. He gets money when he does a trade. He gets a commission, buying or selling. He works for me. It's my money that he is helping me manage. The same with a lawyer. The lawyer works for you. The banker works for you. You have to remember that you're in charge of your future and you can't be afraid of it. You got to embrace it because you're 30 now,
right?
But you're going to be older and you're going to get creaky in your joints and you're not going to feel like working one morning. And I'm at a point now, and I got to tell you, with this whole pandemic thing, I am not nearly as stressed as I could be if I hadn't been doing what I've been doing for decades. Because I'm getting near the end, right? I'm going to retire in a couple of years. And I'm going to be able to. What a great thing to say as a self-employed commercial artist. I'm going to be able to. I've done it on my own. I mean, I've had help again from the brokers I've used, you know, from the reading I've done. And this guy that I'm working with now is probably the 10th broker I've had in my career, because some of them, Yeah, one guy, nice guy, young guy. Hey, I got this great idea for this new investment. Let me tell you about it. Okay, Brian, I'm listening. And he explained it to me and I went, okay, can you say that again? Because I'm not quite clear how it works. And he would say it again and go, and then he goes, gosh, I'm not sure I understand it either. But you but you want me to buy into it and you can't even explain it? Tell you what, Brian, thanks. And I switch brokers.
Yeah.
It's my money. It's my future. They love you as long as they're making commissions. And you have to remember, this is business. This is business. And it's your future. It's your comfort level. And you've got to start. Just to give some historical perspective. There was the 87 stock market crash, Black Friday. And that's, I started investing right after that.
Wow.
And then we had 9/11. And then we had the recession in 2008. And now we have the pandemic. These all incidents were roughly 10 years apart. And I've weathered three of the four. But I've always come back better than I was before the situation. There's always a bounce back, or usually there's a bounce back in the market. You know, I mean, it goes up and down over time. You can't be worried. I mean, sometimes on a bad day, when the market's down, I might see a $20,000 drop in my investments.
Right.
And on a good day, it might go up 15, 20, 25.
Yeah.
But the trend is always upward. It may go down for a while. It may flatline for a while. But overall, in the last 33 years I've been investing, the trend has definitely been up. You have to stay the course, you know, but you got to be disciplined. You got to, once you start putting in money, you have to be consistent. It's not like I put $50 in this week. Okay. When's the next time I'm going to put $50 in? Oh, I don't know. I'm open too much. No, wrong. You got to do it consistently. It may sound impossible when you're 25 or 30, but you've got to dig deep and figure out a way. And your older self is going to thank your younger self. You know, I wished that my dad had told me some of this stuff when I was earlier, because I could have had almost a 10-year head start. I mean, think about that. What if I had 10 more years of doing this? I would have 10 years worth more of growth. I've told my son, I've tried to imbue in him the value of thinking about money as a tool to get from A to B. The idea is not to collect it just for the reason of collecting it or saving it. It's to help you live a life. And of course, I guess I went too far, because that kid is a tightwad. So now I gotta kind of turn the screws back a little bit and let him to ease up on the gas, you know, or ease up on the brakes. I'm sorry. But, you know, he's 20, but at least he understands the value. And of course, I show him my investments. I show him my accounts. Here's what I buy. Here's how they're set up. Just so he gets familiar with the lingo and the way things appear. It's just educate early and slow. Then it becomes easier and faster as you go down the line. I'm now more actively engaged in my buying and selling. I had some accounts that I had for a while. And I made enough on them, and I figured that there's going to be a recession at some point. There's going to be a dip somewhere around this election. Somewhere there's going to be a dip. And I wanted to cash out and hold some cash in my account. So when this dip comes, the stocks I'm holding, which will be depressed more than likely, I'll be able to buy more shares of them at less cost. And they're good companies like the Apples, like the Home Depots, like the Disneys, like the McDonald's, like the Nestle's. These are good, strong companies, and I will grow my portfolio even more. I trust myself enough now after 33 years.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I didn't want to give it all over to this guy. And, you know, you're not as sharp when you're older as you are when you're younger. Of course, I'm the exception. I don't think so, Tim. But I'm a little afraid now that I'm going to make the wrong decision. So I have it set up that I can't buy or sell anything without his help. So if he thinks I'm really going off the rails, he'll block me.
That's good.
And I'm okay with that. But I want to get used to, you know, it's emotional. You know, if you sell that, you don't have it anymore. You know, for some people, it's emotional. It certainly was for me, but I just gave myself a deadline of the end of September of this year that I was going to divest myself of this particular investment, garner the cash, and sit on the cash for a while. Now, if things really turn ugly next year, and I have no idea, it's just I'm saying if, you know, you got to plan for the what if scenarios, I could take some of that cash out to live on and support my family and not sell off any investments because I will have already sold them off at their peak, which I did, and now it's just cash. So I'm building in a little cushion for myself if things really get ugly. You know, business has been slow like it has for a lot of people. So, you know, it's tough. I mean, that shoot the other night was great, but I'm not getting enough of them right now. So what are you going to do when that happens? There's always slowdowns. So you have some money saved outside of the retirement account. I bought Home Depot stock 30 years ago outside of my retirement. I had some extra money. I wanted to buy a good company. My brother recommended it. I bought 100 shares at $50 a share. So it was $5,000. What happens a lot of times when a stock goes up in value, so Home Depot was bought at 50, when it got to be about $200 a share, it went from $50 a share to $200 a share, they split it. So you get four for one. For every share you get, you'll get four other shares. So the value of the stock drops per share, but the volume of shares you own increases. And then when the stock goes up in value, you have even more money. And when it pays a dividend and I use it to buy more shares, of that original 50 shares that I bought, I have 102 shares in my account currently. And I've sold off hundreds of shares over the years to raise money when I needed it. So from that original $50 a share, $5,000 investment, you know, Home Depot is trading close to $300 a share right now.
Wow.
And it's split, I don't know, four or five times since I've owned it. It's been a little piggy bank that just keeps filling up. I drain it and it fills up. I drain it and it fills up.
You're not draining it at Home Depot, are you?
Well, you know what? I do spend most, I am a DIYer, yes. And I do go there. And if I see a little dust on the shelves, I'll wipe it down. I mean, it's my store, right? And I don't ever shop at Lowe's unless I have to. What can I tell you? You've got to, you know, think about tomorrow, but live for today. And that's hard to do. A lot of people, I want to live today. I'll worry about it tomorrow. No, worry about it today. Develop a plan. Just educate yourself. Learn what the lingo means. I started reading stories about finance in the LA Times. I got some books. I talked to people who had money. How do you do it? Even if it's $5, put it in a jar and do that every week. And after a year, you're going to have 52 weeks of $5 in the jar. Then you take that and you put it into a savings account or maybe into a mutual fund or maybe into a certificate of deposit and squirrel that money away.
So I'm curious.
Are you laughing at me, Mr. Martin?
No, I'm laughing at the reference of squirreling it away.
Yes.
What I'm curious about, Michael, is that plan for tomorrow, live for today. And what I think trips up a lot of people is it's hard to see past tomorrow. It's like tomorrow's tomorrow, but like 10 years is a long time and a lot can happen in 10 years. So I don't need to worry about 10 years, which is such a fallacy because I'm feeling this now in my 40s. I'm just like, I just woke up and I'm in my 40s. That's how it feels. It's same thing's going to happen in 50s and 60s. And so unless you take a concerted effort to change, nothing is going to change.
Yes, like anything in your life.
Yeah.
You know, you have to grab it by the horns and wrestle it, and you got to be in charge. You got to come out on top.
Yeah.
I want to say something, and I'm not going to, it's not an oh, woe is me or feel bad, but I have been dealing with a chronic illness since I was a teenager, and it almost torpedoed my life. And that scared me to the point where I viewed myself as a three-legged thoroughbred as opposed to a four-legged nag, meaning as an employee at a company, I would be more attractive as a four-legged nag that could be bullied around that wouldn't cost a lot in terms of healthcare than getting a three-legged thoroughbred that might break down and I got to pay for it. That's how I looked at myself in terms of how an employer might see me. And that's what compelled me to take on self-employment. I didn't think I would do well as an employee. And I mean, I did work for a company for a brief amount of time in my early 20s.
Right.
And it just didn't work out well for a lot of reasons. That's a whole nother story. But I decided, because you have a chronic thing that you're dealing with on a daily basis, you have to take care of yourself. What are the ways to do this? Which also forced me, or compelled me, to charge as much as I could possibly charge.
Yeah. Like, how did you get that confidence, though, to say, you know what, I'm going to charge five figures on a job that's going to take me four figures or three figures?
Mm-hmm. Because I know the integrity of myself, of the product that I deliver. I know that I was going to work hard. I know that I was not going to be defeated by whatever issues or problems I was experiencing on a particular assignment. That was not going to defeat my purpose of delivering an excellent photograph. I had no fear that I wasn't going to deliver. Mm. And no matter what, I was going to make good on my promise to the client. And I didn't see that a lot with my competition. They spoke it, but didn't do it. Mm. And I never, ever turned down a job. One time I made 50 cents on a job, literally 50 cents. And the client, she goes, why did you hand walk this little slide dupe through the process and spent the whole day for $1.70? And I said, because I know that when you have a $10,000 project, you're going to think of me. And she went, oh, you're right.
Now, would she have thought of you, though, if you wouldn't have had that great comeback? Because that's a great line. I mean, that's a great reminder of just how important it is to not just say something once or have that reputation of doing the $1.70 job, but you were almost in a way coaching her to think about what you wanted from them.
Absolutely, dude. Absolutely. I practice conversations. I write down scripts. I live inside my head in a fantasy world. I only come out to reality to pay the bills. Otherwise, I live in my head all the time. I imagine interactions. How am I going to respond if she says this or that? How can I guide the conversation? You read books about self-employment and you'll see some of these references, but you have to imagine yourself always interacting with the client. And this client was a woman, married with a kid, and so was I. So we had some other bond we could talk about. Other clients were single gay men. It was a different conversation. Mm-hmm. Straight men, manly men, crush golf balls with a squeeze of their hand. You know, you got to treat them a little differently. You know, they have a different way of relating. And you have to, you're a chameleon. Not that you're not authentic. You're just adjusting for the circumstances. Mm. And that allowed me, listen, it was Disney, a Fortune 500 company. They have the money. So I didn't feel bad. I'm much more flexible now in my pricing because I enjoy the work and the money's important, but it's really, listen, I got some killer stuff last night. Like I said, that was exciting. But I think we're getting a little bit off track here.
We are right on track because what you're speaking to is this idea of you're taking direct action for your life.
Absolutely,
whether it's in the conversation with the woman saying, you know, if you entrust me with this, you'll entrust me with a $10,000 job. Mm-hmm. That is an extension of forward thinking.
Oh, yeah. You know, right. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Hey, you're pretty smart. You know, you should have a podcast or some kind of show.
Working on it.
Yeah.
Aren't we all? Four and a half years in the making.
Yeah. Well, you know, anything worth doing is worth doing well, and it takes time.
It does.
As much as us artists train to do what we do, I mean, I'm very disciplined. But before this shoot, so the shoot was Wednesday night. We got on site about 7:45, and we left at 2:15 in the morning.
Wow.
So a pretty long shoot. And and not knowing exactly how I was going to shoot or what I was going to shoot, I spent, for prior day and a half, I had 25 batteries I had to charge for all my various devices and charge them up, get all the cameras packed and put them in the car a certain way. And then, you know, I get on site, I survey the scene, talk to the superintendent, what's the process, decide where camera's going to go, which ones I'm going to use. You know, it's a, how much time is it going to take to set up these cameras? versus the footage I'm going to get with a particular device. You know, I'm always making these calculations, mm-hmm. constantly thinking about stuff, planning ahead. And so I do that with my work. Mm-hmm. There's no reason why I can't do that with my finances.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to think about that. And the other thing is, and I don't know how much people put value to this, but your credit score is important. Mm-hmm. Your credit score allows you a lot of financial freedom. I am currently financing 7 purchases right now, and I'm paying them down on no interest credit cards. Mm. So I basically have free loans from Bank of America, Home Depot. They're at Home Depot again. And I'm making the minimum payment. So, you know, it's 18 months, no interest if you pay it off in 18 months. So the trick mm-hmm. is, if it's a $1,000 purchase, you divide that by 18, and those are your monthly payments to make mm-hmm. it paid off before the time frame is up. Mm-hmm. And I always add 10% more, so the payments actually diminish over time, and the last payment is next to nothing. And because of that, I'm floating, I don't know, $7,000 or $8,000 on 4 or 5 different credit cards. I really don't know exactly how many, but there's a few. And the Bank of America one is going to be paid off by the end of December. The Home Depot one is getting paid off by the end of January. And the Barclays card is getting paid off by the end of 2021. I think I'm paying about $1,000 a month on all these payments. It's free money from the bank. And I'm getting the free money from the bank because my credit score, anything above 760, mm-hmm. you're considered a good credit risk. I'm regularly in the 820 range.
Wow.
And I think the maximum, depending on your scoring model, is 830 to 850. So I'm up in the ether. They're crawling over themselves to give me credit cards. I have 17 of them in my file cabinet. I don't use them all. But when I make purchases that I might be a little shaky, like guaranteed, you know, buy this thing online, guaranteed, double your money back if you don't like it, I'll put that on a credit card I don't use a lot. So if there's a problem, I just stop the credit card and they can't continually bill me. I don't get into financial trouble.
Yeah.
I'm very disciplined. It's my money. It's my future. What do I want my future to look like? And I just spend some time dealing with it and thinking about it. I want my son, you know, we have a guest house on our property mm-hmm. and it used to be my studio, but since the pandemic, it's now his house. I want him to see me manage my business. I want him to see me not stressed out over money. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned about money and cash mm-hmm. flow, but I'm not stressed out about it. I'm not like going to bed drunk, hoping I don't wake up.
Yeah.
I go to bed drunk, hoping I wake up. There's a difference, folks. It's subtle, but there's a difference. No, I'm just saying I look forward to the day. I look forward when I wake up. Mm-hmm. As self-employed people, we have to take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
There's just no question about it. And this is part of that self-care. And if you start early and small, it gets easier and bigger over time. That's the magic of it. Mm-hmm. The quicker you start, the less you need to do. Because your time frame is so much longer to get to the result. There's a thing with the government in terms of your taxes and mm-hmm. contributing to your retirement accounts. If you're in your 50s or so, they have catch-up contribution. You can put up to $5,500 a year away. Well, who has that kind of extra cash laying around? If you're doing it when you're 25, $100 a month will be sufficient.
That's your banker calling.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I have it on. Sorry, folks. I really hate when that happens. And it's a project I might have going on in Vegas. So I
just assumed that it was Home Depot calling to like give you more money.
Yes, that's who it was. Start early, start small, and it just becomes part of your life. And you have to be disciplined to say, no, I don't need that $150 hoodie from Home Depot. God, get me off that, would you? I don't need that $150 hoodie from Amazon today. No, what was it? Amazon Prime the last 2 days or 13th and 14th? And people are going to buy stuff because it's free shipping. That's why you're buying it, not because you need it. So how many hundreds or thousands of dollars did you rack up on your account by doing that?
Yeah.
I went and saw some things I want to get. They're on a wish list. when I buy, except for the financing I'm doing right now because of the pandemic, and I got to do take advantage of these no interest offers. Mm-hmm. I have the cash in the bank before I put something on my credit card. So when the bill comes due, it gets paid off.
Yeah.
I pay all of my credit cards in full every month, as far as the ones that are not financed. One for like gas, you know, for the car, something at the hardware store. Those get paid off every month. Yeah, I do go to other places. Yes, Home Depot. You listening to me, Home Depot? I have other lovers, okay? I have other lovers. So you're the best, but you're not the only one.
What I appreciate about all you're sharing, Michael, though, is you've shared your journey to where you're at today. And and there might be some skeptics in the audience. There might be someone says, oh, sure, it's easy to be on the other side of this because you had all that flush Disney money back in the day, or fill in the company, you know, that you might have worked for.
No, that's a fair thing to say.
So if you were to start today, given how things have drastically changed from when you started, like, where would you start? Like, what are the choices that you know people need to make today, apart from the $150 hoodie from Amazon?
The choice is, I'm going to do this for myself. The first thing starts with self-love. You have to appreciate who you are and love yourself enough to take care of yourself. Don't put yourself in harm's way. Make that commitment to yourself. Exercise, eat well, sleep well. And you know, if on Friday, or let's say Sunday morning, you wake up and you got an extra $5 in your pocket, put that in an envelope and put it away. Just start. Get used to the idea. And as you start to see that grow, you're going to feel more comfortable with yourself and what you're doing. On the other side, get to be the best you can at your craft, whatever it is. Always practice. What a lot of people don't understand or appreciate is how difficult it is to shoot at night on an active construction site with crappy lighting that's not a high level of energy, where you have no control over it, and you've got to position yourself and get the right moment and have the camera control set correctly and know what the exposure should look like. So when post-production, you can reduce the noise, capture the action, and craft an amazing picture. That is hard to do. I practice that all the time. I'm always practicing editing. I bought some shotgun mics and some LED lights. Nice. My wife, who is a teacher, she's doing lessons that are now online, and we made a little studio in the bedroom my son moved out of, and we've been recording these lessons. So I've been doing two microphone shoots, cutting them together and practicing that. So when I get on these job sites, I understand what I'm dealing with in terms of recording sound. Now, I bought a little on-camera LED light. I wanted to use it. I should have had it on the last night shoot. I didn't realize what I was missing. I bought one the afternoon of the shoots. So I went out to the store Wednesday and bought the light. I did some research. What a great tool. Did this thing make the pictures glow because the highly reflective stripes on the vests of the workers really showed up and made them pop out of the scene? Makes them look a little otherworldly. So I'm trying to work and kind of minimize that. But that tool gave me a lot of confidence that now if I do any on-camera interviews at night, this light will give me the power and the color temperature. I now know how to record sound. I have the confidence to do some of that at night now. That kind of discipline to keep, I've been in this business 41 years. I'm always working on every aspect of my game. You just have to start. You have to commit to yourself. I love myself enough to do this long-term.
I love the mention of commitment, because sometimes in the creative world, I can only speak for myself in this, but commitment is only as far as committing to what's coming next. And it's generally external of ourselves. So like when we can commit to ourselves as much as we commit to that project or commit to that paycheck, I think it magnifies and multiplies what we're able to actually accomplish.
Yes. And that starts with loving yourself, that you're worthy of being taken care of. If you don't take care of yourself, you sure as hell are not taking care of anybody else.
Yeah.
And I have committed to taking care of my wife and my son. Mm-hmm. And that is a grave responsibility. And how am I going to do that? What do I have to put into place to make sure that happens? Mm-hmm. What if I'm not having a good time? And, you know, when business is slow, I have to go and live on savings. Mm-hmm. And at one point, outside of my retirement accounts, at one point, I had almost $200,000 in available cash for emergency spending.
Wow.
This was in the late 80s. And we had to spend a lot of that trying to start a family. We ended up, our son is adopted. Mm-hmm. But before that, we went through in vitro, and that's very expensive. And that's where most of the money came from to do that. Mm-hmm. I sure as hell wasn't going to borrow it. I mean, that just would have been, I'd still be paying it off. I'm still paying for it now. He's 20. Not fair. Let's cut that one out too.
I've cut in the last 24 minutes out. What are you talking about? No, yeah.
But, you know, again, you're right. You have to commit to it. It's a lifestyle choice. It's an attitude about life choice. And, you know, we're self-employed people. We're powerful. We are powerful people. We don't realize it. We get to do what we want to do, when we want to do, the way we feel like doing it. Mm-hmm. Yesterday afternoon, after I recovered from that shoot, I texted the superintendent and said it was really great to see you working this forklift. You made it look so easy, but I know it was difficult, and it was impressive, and it was fun, and thanks for asking me to document this for you. And he writes back, "You're welcome, Michael. You're a top-notch photographer. It's always great working with you, and I look forward to seeing your pictures." Mm. What a great thing to say. No client has ever said that to me. As far as in a text message like that, you know, it's just a nice, I'm keeping that on my phone. That is never going away.
Do you think it's because you recognized in him the discipline and effort and work ethic and all of the things that went into him doing his job?
Oh, absolutely.
Calling that out?
When I show you the video, these are 40-foot long H-beams that weigh 9,200 pounds apiece that are elevated on a bridge that have to be removed with a forklift.
Wow.
He didn't drop one of them. He manipulated those things like they were toothpicks. Wow. It was amazing to watch. And, you know, I try to have good manners all the time. And it was 2:15 in the morning and he was working and I didn't really, you know, I mean, I said, "Hey, thanks. I got what I need. It's been great. I'll talk to you soon." I didn't really give him a formal thank you or goodbye, really. Mm-hmm. And so I thought a text message after the fact, it was just good manners. And I wanted him to know that I wasn't just there farting around, taking pictures, getting a paycheck. I was really working and I was appreciating the integrity and skill that he had. Mm-hmm. And I felt obligated to do the same thing for his benefit because he was allowing me to be there. Mm-hmm. At midnight, which was 4 hours into the job, I said, "Hey, Eric, I got what I needed, I think. I'm pretty much covered, but is there other stuff happening? Do you want me to stay?" "Well, I'm going to do the other side." I said, "Well, you know, I can stay if you want." He goes, "Yeah, why don't you stay? I think it would be good." I said, "I'm sensitive to the money. I don't want to run up the bill." And he goes, "It's fine. Just stay." That was great. So he knows it's going to cost more. Mm-hmm. Having a communication with the client, appreciating and showing them I respect what they do, which I do. It's not just BS, although I do BS a lot. But I love being on these construction sites, seeing these specialized tools and the way they move around. And, you know, so my whole game, you know, I'm doing the same thing with every aspect of my life. I'm committed to it. Mm-hmm. And finance and saving for tomorrow is part of that. And people, you can do it. You've already made a big step. You're working for yourself. How exciting is that? Learn your craft. And even if it's only a dollar, put a dollar in an envelope. Get used to the idea. Get used to the idea of doing this for your future self. Almost without exception, the number one thing people in my age group and older say when asked, "What would you say to your younger self if you could go back and visit?"
Yeah.
Start saving and start saving earlier. Almost universally, that's the answer. Because you don't realize at your age and younger what it's like to be my age and older.
And I think the question that's really left to ask about this all, is it ever too late to start?
No. It's never too late to start because you will have something to live on, but your lifestyle may not be as comfortable. You may not be living in a house you own. You may end up renting an apartment, or maybe you have enough to buy an RV and you just sort of travel the country and live in your RV. Nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. What is it that you'd like to see your life be like?
Yeah.
We are fortunate again that we own a house. So there's lots of equity in the house right now. So there's some comfort. We could keep the place or sell it when Junior is out of school and on his own life. The guest house he's living in is not permanent. I hope to break the news to him soon.
He's a dedicated listener of this show. He just found out.
Yes, yeah. Son, I'm just kidding. This is all for the show. It's never too late to start. But again, the sooner you start, it requires smaller amounts, the bigger the payoff. Mm-hmm. You have to force yourself to do it. You just have to.
Yeah. It's a habit. It's a habit. If you don't have the habit, it feels hard.
It's like eating on a regular basis, sleeping on a regular basis, exercising on a regular basis, practicing your craft on a regular basis, checking with your friends on a regular basis, saving some money on a regular basis. That's what you have to do. Yeah. And if I can do it, you can do it. You know, as you said earlier, the Disney years notwithstanding, mm-hmm. I still would have found a way to do it. Maybe not at the same level. Maybe I wouldn't have as much as I have now, but I would certainly still have some.
And I think that regardless of whether you started, you know, 40 years ago or today, regardless of the makeup of the industry, competition, technology, all that stuff, I think you really would be in the same place because you have made the conscious decision to be in that place.
Yes. Yeah. You know, find something in your life that drives you to this point. For me, it was the medical concern. Mm-hmm. That was my motivator. What's your motivator? Mm. Make it a good thing or a bad thing? You know, find something in your life that you can hang your hat on and use it as your motivator. I saw a terrible life for myself because of this health issue. That compelled me to take charge. You know, I manage it day to day, the health issue, and it is, you know, kept at bay most of the time, but I do have to deal with it. And it's just part of my life. Okay, but thank goodness I did this years ago because now it's just so much easier for me.
Yeah.
You know, find the thing that motivates you and keep that in your mind's eye. That's the goal, the ring, the prize, whatever cliche you want to use. I know I watch way too many stupid movies. By the way, I'm watching something really good right now on Netflix.
What are you watching?
It's called Black Spot.
Haven't heard it.
Did you hear of Longmire? Have you heard of Longmire?
No.
Longmire is a U.S.-based show about a sheriff in some small town in Montana. And it's usual stuff. You know, every episode they solve some weird crime, but there's some big overarching story throughout the entire series. Black Spot, the same thing. It's French and it's dubbed. Hmm. And it's, oh my God, I'm on the edge of my seat with it. It's so good. So if you like those kinds of shows, Longmire and Black Spot are really highly produced, and Black Spot is my current favorite show. So
nice. I've been addicted to Chef's Table.
What is that about?
It's a documentary series about chefs.
Are you a cook?
I love to cook. I wouldn't say I'm great at it, but I enjoy doing it.
And what's your favorite dish that you make and like to eat?
Ooh, you know, you can't go wrong with tacos.
Oh, of course, yeah. Low-hanging fruit, Chris Martin. Low-hanging fruit.
I love making my own spaghetti sauce,
okay. Chicken
enchiladas.
Okay.
I had a baked potato and steak last night. That was delicious.
We had baked potato two nights ago with no steak. But there was butter and cream cheese and chives, onions, and diced ham inside the baked potato. So that
sounds delicious.
My wife is a gourmet cook.
Nice.
So it's like eating at a 5-star restaurant almost every night.
Ooh, that's cool. Yeah. What I love about the show is that it really captures, I think, the obsession, the work ethic, what it takes to actually make it in the fine dining world. Mm-hmm. And the filmmaking, to me, the storytelling is just beautiful. It's
really
a beautiful pace. Like, it's a slower pace, so they spend time to really go into the show as opposed to chop, 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 like chopping your video like they're chopping an onion, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, it's there's time to focus and take it in, and I love that style. It's on Netflix, and there's a barbecue edition too, if you like barbecue.
Oh, I have seen that little thumbnail. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it has to do with food. I decided long ago, my wife can't make money and I can't cook. So we decided long ago, she cooks and I make money.
Nice.
When we were maybe 10 years married, some of her girlfriends were really giving her a hard time because we have a traditional role-playing marriage. I take out the trash, she cooks, you know, I make the money, I pay the bills, I do the yard work, you know, we share some of it, but mostly we have traditional roles. Mm-hmm. And she told them, if it was reversed, we would be broke and hungry all the time. So we know where our strengths are.
Right.
And
which is a great point to really kind of put a ribbon on this conversation, mm-hmm. is that, you know, building your craft on your strengths is important, mm-hmm. but you might not have strengths when it comes to finance. And that's where you really need to learn, educate yourself, you know, align yourself with people that though that's their strength, but don't be afraid to fire them when they're trying to sell you things that you don't want.
Right. And it's a muscle you have to exercise. So if you want to get started, just read up on what a share is. You know, Google, why do companies issue stocks? What is a share? And once you get that down, learn what is a bond? Mm-hmm. What is a dividend? Mm-hmm. Why does value matter? What is the stock market? What is NASDAQ? What is the Dow? Mm-hmm. Just pick simple questions and get the nomenclature in your head, mm-hmm. and become somewhat familiar with it. Mm-hmm. And if you talk to someone who, yeah, you don't even know what the Dow is. Okay, pal, can you do an illustration? Draw me a face, putz. You know, don't let them intimidate you because you don't know. You'll be able to learn more about finance easier than that person will learn how to draw a face.
Yeah. And there's a lot of amazing resources nowadays about finance and taking the right steps.
Yeah, there's no excuse not to do it. There just isn't. Mm-hmm. And it's scary, but take the first step. Learn the definitions. Learn the lingo. Mm-hmm. Put a dollar away a week. Put yourself in the same position I put myself in. You can do it.
And that is the best way to end. You can do it. Well, Michael, thank you. This is an awesome conversation. Thank you for sharing your wisdom. And I've certainly learned a lot. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And anytime, I really appreciate the fact that you let me barge into your life like this.
Of course.
We're in a brotherhood.
Absolutely.
So you're welcome. And I appreciate you saying yes, Chris. I really do. I enjoy the conversations. You're a smart guy with deep, thoughtful questions. And it's always fun to come on the show.
Well, thank you. And I can't wait to share this. And I hope people will act on your wisdom.
You know, if they want to contact you or me with an idea or, hey, how about this? I'm happy to, you know, help any way I can.
As we wrap up this episode, I have to admit something. Michael's connection of financial literacy with self-care, it blew my mind. It really challenges me to keep educating myself when it comes to not only what I'm charging, but how I'm preparing for savings, investments, and all of the other considerations with finances that I don't spend enough time thinking about. And I really appreciated his views on excelling at the craft, practicing sales conversations, and really doing the necessary work preparing for my financial future because no one else is going to do it. And I hope you really find the encouragement that you need today to start saving for your future. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.